I'm Effie Parks. Welcome to Once Upon a Jane, the podcast. This is a place I created for us to connect and share the stories of our not-so-typical lives. Raising kids who are born with rare genetic syndromes and other types of disabilities can feel pretty isolating. What I know for sure is that when we can hear the triumphs and challenges from others who get it, we can find a lot more laughter, a lot more hope, and feel a lot less alone. I believe there are some magical healing powers that can happen for all of us through sharing our stories, and I'll take all the help I can get.
Once Upon a Jane is proud to be part of Bloodstream Media. Living in a family affected by rare and chronic illness can be isolating, and sometimes the best medicine is connecting to the voices of people who share your experience. This is why Bloodstream Media produces podcasts, blogs, and other forms of content for patients, families, and clinicians impacted by rare and chronic diseases. Visit bloodstreammedia.com to learn more.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the show. This is Once Upon a Gene, and I am your host, Effie Parks. I'm so grateful that you're here. If you're new, welcome. Please send me a message if there's anything I can do to help support you or direct you to a specific episode. If you're looking for something in particular to be on the show, send me a message and we'll make it happen. For all my OGs around here, thank you so much for continuing to support this show. It means so much to me. And I love being a part of helping to inform and empower and connect with families like ours. So let's keep it up. Can't believe it's already spring. Slow down. Okay, I hope I see some of you at World Orphan Drug coming up in Boston, Massachusetts on April 23rd through the 25th. I'm going to be speaking on a panel with my friends over at GeneDx to talk about the importance of genetic testing, of course. There's also going to be some super other fun stuff. Beyond the Diagnosis is going to be there. Ford's Portrait is going to be there. I got to see it in person for real. I'm going to cry. And I'm sure there might be a secret unveiling of a new little kiddo too. So I hope you can come if you're near Boston. Definitely show up. Advocates have free admission. So make it happen if you can, okay? It'd be good to see some new faces and some friendly old ones, of course. So today's conversation, I have a very special advocate. I would say that she's sort of fresh and new, but her journey has probably felt a lot longer than that and a lot more arduous than most. Her son Dawson was born into the world with a disorder called Krabbe disease, some of which you probably know, and she has become just a super motivated and passionate advocate, and I'm really excited to just watch her journey and see where this fuel takes her. I think she's going to be pretty unstoppable. She's not only advocating for Krabbe, but she's on a path to really help change the newborn screening system so these kids have a chance at early detection to completely change the outcome for these children who have this diagnosis. And I'm really excited for you to hear from her and learn from her and maybe be inspired for her and definitely send her a message of support if you can. She's very special and I'm super excited to have her on the show, have a little conversation with her and introduce her to you. So please welcome my guest, Casey Feld. Hi, Casey. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Effie. Thanks for having me.
Yep. I'm really looking forward to chatting with you and helping to spread your story about Dawson and Krabbe and newborn screening and all the things. And I know you're doing a little work helping out library and you're also working with another foundation. You're a busy, busy gal. So thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Could you do me a favor and give us a little introduction?
Yeah, I'm Casey and I got into the rare disease space when my son Dawson was diagnosed with Krabbe disease. He was born a perfectly healthy baby boy and then around 3 to 4 months, my husband and I noticed symptoms such as lack of head control and feeding difficulties and just irritability. So long story short, we started doing all the testing and about 6 months, we got the diagnosis of Krabbe disease. And Krabbe is a always terminal diagnosis. So we made him comfortable for about around 8 months and he passed away at 15 months. So then I didn't know exactly where I wanted to go after he passed, but something told me that I couldn't just let all this stuff, everything that we just went through happen and not take all that knowledge and all that pain and just let it go away. So I had to do something with that. And I decided to start advocating for families with rare diseases, you know, leukodystrophy families. And that's kind of like why I'm here, to share my story.
I can only imagine that even blinking after losing your beautiful child is something that takes such guts. So especially with all that you're doing, it's really just remarkable, Casey. So thank you for continuing and for advocating for other kids with Krabbe.
Thank you. As he was progressing, I really didn't know how life was going to be after he passed. Like, I didn't know if I was just going to lay in bed all day, or how life even looked after not taking care of my child. I'm used to, you know, being a mom, and then it was like it was just taken away. But then I realized, like, I have to do something. Like, this can't just keep happening, people losing their children when there's newborn screening, and we just have to spread awareness of this disease. So I've kind of made it my life goal, my mission.
Could you share a little bit about Dawson with us?
Sure. He was my husband and I's first child. And I can just tell you like a little bit about his personality. And when I say his personality, he never spoke. We only got two laughs about it, like from him, but he had the biggest personality. Like he would roll his eyes when he was annoyed. But like he would do the biggest sighs when like you knew he was like, okay, I'm happy. And he loved Baby Shark and Mickey Mouse Clubhouse. And he just loved being like laying against you, or as my husband and I call it, monkeying. And he was like the best cuddle bug.
Ugh, he's so beautiful. I'll make sure to add a photo of Dawson on the carousel when we share this episode. He's so freaking cute. Okay, well, let's go back to that initial part where you started noticing three of super, super common symptoms that most of us face, you know, with the lack of head control, the problems feeding and stuff like that. Did you have some initial challenges getting through the system and getting a diagnosis? It seems like you got a diagnosis fairly quickly. So I'm imagining that these symptoms were perhaps very progressed.
So like the head control was like the big thing that was like a red flag, like especially with our pediatrician. And then as like for the feeding, it just seemed like it took longer for him to eat, where it would take, you know, usually like 30 minutes to give a baby like an 8-ounce bottle. It would take us 40 minutes just to get like 4 ounces in him. And it just got progressively worse. And then it got to the point where he would throw it all up after you were gave all that time to feed him. He threw it all up. And we later found out he was aspirating on that food, because he was having trouble swallowing. And then, so as our neurologist started testing, he got an MRI. And 2 days after that MRI, he started having spasms. And that's because that MRI had anesthesia. And we later found out anesthesia does not sit well with Krabbe babies. It took about 2 months to get a diagnosis. I mean, Krabbe is so rare. So it took a while and a week-long hospital visit, because he was just so dehydrated. And we tried so hard to get food in him, and he lost like 2 pounds in a short amount of time. And he was just sick. And it was shortly after that hospital stay, we got the diagnosis. And that was 3 weeks before the COVID shutdown.
It was just like so hard to hear. And I know so many people have gone through something almost just exactly like this. It's so frustrating, right? Especially with the newborn screening stuff. Let's actually circle back there. I don't even know what I'm talking about right now. I'm just so annoyed by that. Okay, so when you decided that you had to be a part of this change, I want to kind of go back to that realization and that sort of charge that you started to lead for yourself and for your family and for Dawson, because you are from Virginia. And at that time, there was no screening for Krabbe. How many states were doing it? And kind of give me out the lay of the land of where Krabbe was on the RUSP and newborn screening.
I believe at the time, there were 10 states. I'm not exactly sure, like when we entered the Krabbe world, like how many states. But there was a family in Virginia, the Nicholas family. They had already started a bill for Virginia in called Nicholas Law, House Bill 97. And we kind of, once we got connected with them, they live like an hour from us, so we met them in person, and we kind of joined in on that fight. And we were doing like work groups with the Department of Health for Virginia. And we were trying to explain to them why early detection is so like important, and why newborn screening is so important, and pleading with them emotionally how it is with parents. And we just kept getting shut down and shut down and shut down. And so when it came to the vote in November, they said no. And that was 4 days after Dawson passed, they said no. And I was like, I had to testify. And I'm like literally crying, testifying. And the fact that they said no was just like terrible. So we were trying to do another bill. And like a year or two later comes, you know, crab egg getting added to the rust. And we think we're there. And they voted 7-7. So it got knocked down. And it's just like, we're always so close. But then we get another shot in this January, like this past January, they voted 10-3 as a yes. And it's just an amazing victory. Like, I cried so hard when I saw that they passed it through. I honestly didn't think it was going to happen, just because how many times we were said no, like they told us no. And the fact that they actually like finally were like, okay, it's time now. Let's get this going. Like, it was just an amazing feeling.
Yeah. It mystifies me. I mean, I speak a lot on my issues with the RUSP and newborn screening, but this disorder actually has some sort of treatment. Like, obviously it's not perfect, but it's something. If anyone listened to Anne Rigari's episode a few episodes ago, I'll put it in the show notes. She had two kids with Krabbe who both passed away, but Gina actually lived into her teenage years due to a transplant. And that's what you're fighting for, right? Is to have more time with these beautiful children and to give them more of an opportunity to live their life. So it's really difficult to understand why states would deny these bills when there is something available to help them live past, you know, 16, 18 months old.
I mean, and that's like all we're asking, like as parents, like we're asking for more time. I never realized how much time is, like how precious time is until we went through all of this. And I only got 15 months with my son. And like, I wanted more, I wanted more, I wanted more. Like, of course I want more time with my son, but at that cost, he it's like pain, like, you know, he's through pain. So it's bittersweet in that time. But I testified when it came to the RUSP, and I told them, you never know how precious time is until you're given an hourglass and you're just waiting for the sand to run out. And that's how it is. You're just, like, it's with Krabbe, it was just like a waiting game. You never knew when that day was going to come. It's like every day you woke up like, is this going to be the day? Is this going to be the day? Is this going to be the day that I lose my son? Is this going to be the day? And emotionally, it's torture. And you just want to get through to these, to the, you know, Department of Health, these lawmakers, that with newborn screening and like transplant, early detection, all that, you don't have to live like that. You know, yes, like transplant, is it perfect? No. Is child going to live like a perfectly healthy life? No. But you get that time.
Well, and that can't be guaranteed for anyone, right? Like,
you can be hit by a bus like today, like tomorrow. Like, I mean, that's just life.
There's other advocates that come to my mind who are passionate like you with newborn screening, like Taylor Kane and Elisa Seeger, who've done so, so much for leukodystrophies. And I wonder, what do you see your future role being in state legislation for newborn screening, and especially Krabbe, of course, and other leukodystrophies, or what? Like, what do you think that your advocacy level is going to be at this point moving forward? Are you kind of going to take a break because it's done in your state and you've accomplished a huge feat already? Or do you think that you're going to kind of go out further and try to get this on all of the panels?
Last year, I was kind of working with Every Life, the Every Life Foundation, and trying to get Virginia RUSP aligned, but then they pushed it back to let's do it this next year. And I even worked with my delegate Otto Watchman for Southampton County about trying to get Virginia Krabbe disease newborn screening, but he said, because it's not on the RUSP yet, you know, let's not go there yet. And as soon as the RUSP it got added to the RUSP, I gave him a call. He is like, let's do this for next year. He said, and I've been checking. He's like, I checked actually a couple months ago, if it was added. he's like, let's do this.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. Good job, like, seeking out your ambassadors and telling your story so they're invested. That helps change the world.
Yeah, we're going to get it in Virginia. I know we are. This has been a hard state. It's so frustrating because I was born here. Like, I've lived here my whole entire life. And it's just the fact that, like, okay, you're doing me wrong. Like, come on, stop now. Help me out.
I give all of you who do this legislative policy work for our rare disease community so much credit because it is really difficult work and it feels like you're constantly just being pushed down the stairs and like your whole existence is in the hands of these strange old people who don't seem to be listening. And it is so frustrating. I've only like dipped my toe in here and there here in the state of Washington, and it almost seems like a constant uphill battle, and it can feel really defeating. So when there are families like you who have so much on your shoulders already, who continue to fight for other families, it is just, I mean, I'm so thankful for you, Casey. I'm so thankful for people like you who do this really hard work because it's not like a glamorous type of advocacy. It is hard. It is really hard.
We were trying to get it passed the first time. I remember I sat in a hotel room with Dawson, my husband. We went to Maryland for like his work, whatever. And I sat and I wrote every like delegate in Virginia about like, help me with this bill. Help me with this bill. Help me with this bill. Every senator, I mean, everybody, like same email, just change the name. And a lot of times I didn't get responses. A lot of times it's like, oh, well, you got to contact your delegate. But I mean, just hounded people. It's not for the weak.
No, it's really not. What kind of advice or maybe like a short to-do list would you give someone who's maybe intrigued about policy advocacy in where they could start and like what kind of things can they do that'll give them the biggest bang for their buck on contributing? And especially to those people who are like, I want to help, but I have all of these barriers to make me do this and this and this kind of advocacy, but maybe I can send emails. Like, kind of give me a little breakdown about what people can do.
I would definitely contact EveryLife on where to start. Search your, you know, your lawmakers, like who's in your area, especially your delegate, because they can help. They have connections and they can definitely like walk you through things. Because like my delegate, he made the calls to like the health advisory board and stuff when he was trying to figure out like, okay, is this a good time to do it? What are you thinking? And he said that, you know, last year wasn't a good time because it wasn't on the RUSP. So he didn't want to like pour all this time and emotional, you know, like draining into this bill and it just gets shut down again. But I would definitely talk to your delegate and call and email. I would start with the delegate. And, you know, Every Life Foundation can definitely help you on anything in board screening.
Yeah, I need to get the Every Life Foundation on the show. I don't know why they haven't been on here yet. I feel like they have because I, you know, I'm so embedded, but I need to get them on here. Yeah, anything policy work, definitely contact the everylifefoundation.org. And they also run so many workshops and trainings. So like they can build you up as an advocate like this, and they can really give you all the toolkits for you to be successful and make this happen in your states. And there's just a lot of really beautiful people that work there and volunteer there. So,
and getting like your disease organization involved, like, so for Crab Bay is like Hunter's Hope and Crab Bay Connect and the Leukodystrophy Newborn Screening Action Network, like anybody that's like related to your disease specific, get them in it too. The more the merrier.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like maybe there's just some sort of magical something or other with families who have these beautiful kids with leukodystrophies, because I feel like almost everyone I know who is pounding the pavement for newborn screening is connected in some way to a leukodystrophy family or a parent of one or a sibling or a child. And I wonder why. And I think of Elisa's story, if anyone remembers back to that episode, you know, her son Aiden was 7, and that's when he started to have symptoms and get sick and passed away very quickly afterwards. But she had been researching his symptoms in the hospital when he got sick, and she was like, wait a second, this test was here the whole time, it just wasn't in New York? And I wonder if it's just that sort of injustice that has fired up this community so much, because it's there and treatments are there and states don't have them on their newborn screening panels. How could you not want to burn a building down when you knew that it was there and just not there for you?
The day of diagnosis, and I found out there was a newborn screening test and that Virginia didn't offer it, I was furious. I was like, I was already like furious about, you know, getting this diagnosis and grief and all of the emotions. But when the neurologist said like he wasn't caught doing newborn screening like other states, and I was just like, what? Like, why? Like, why don't we just all offer the same thing? Like, why is this a thing?
I would for sure be in prison. I would be in prison. Yeah. Guaranteed. Can you speak on any types of supports, orgs, or whatever stuff was most beneficial to you and Alex during Dawson's first part of his life? Like any community supports that really made a difference for you, or that you would recommend that maybe you found later that helped families?
Honestly, the biggest support was like Crabby Connect and Hunter's Hope, and then the Facebook group Crabby Families. I would go on there and ask a question, and people would flood like, oh, try this, try that, try this. It was like a family of nurses and doctors on there. And everyone says like, you're more of a doctor than other people because you know your child. And everyone says, Dr. Escalar is way to go, or Dr. Kirschberg is way to go. And then you're the next best one because you know your child and you know what to do. And it's just such a rare disease. You instantly become like a nurse for your child. I met so many wonderful families on Crabby Families Facebook group that I'm friends with today. And that's been like one of the best things that came out of this whole craziness and sadness and like wonderfulness in the same time is meeting these families that's been there for us.
Amen. How has advocating for Krabbe disease and newborn screening changed you personally? Like, what's been the most rewarding or challenging part of this for you? Like, in your heart or even practically?
It became my new passion. Not just advocating for Krabbe, but just for disease in general. Like when he passed, like I knew I wanted to do this like as a career, not just volunteer work. And I just grinding, reaching out to any and all rare disease, you know, like organizations like, Hey, you're hiring. Like I have this personal experience. And I eventually like broke that barrier and, you know, started working for a library and the Sisters Hope Foundation. And that's where I'm at today. And it's been the most amazing. I'm finally like where I've wanted to be in a long time, in honor of Dawson. And, you know, I don't know why Dawson got this diagnosis, why we lost him. Like, I don't think I'll ever understand the why, but I think I'm like heading in the direction of like, okay, He's sending me to do God's work. This is my only explanation of like where I'm supposed to be or why all this happened, if that makes any kind of sense.
Of course it does. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it makes a lot of sense and also none at all, because like you said, it just never should have happened in the first place. But I very much respect you and definitely identify with you in terms of how much fighting for this and changing the landscape for the next family and the next family and the next family feels, and how much it pushes you to do better and be better, and the connections that you make. So like I sing your praises there. I mean, I totally get that. And I think it's such a beautiful transformation in this whole journey, right? That could lock you in a dark, dark hole forever and ever. And one couldn't even be shamed by that. But the fact that you're out there doing what you're doing and it is helping you and helping other people is really, really special. And I'm glad you're doing it. And shout out again to Library. You mentioned them, Sierra Phillips and them. And also Heidi from My Sister's Hope. Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you found her. Heidi is such a hero. And she's also been on this podcast, My Sister's Hope Foundation. And she's very active on TikTok now, which brings me a lot of joy. I love her videos. So I'm so happy she has you. And I think it's really cool, too, that you're using all of your skills for anyone and everyone who is willing to put you on. So that's very cool. And it's also cool to just expand out, right? And meet all of the other rare disease people and not just in your community. Because I can imagine too, like with the Krabbe community, that perhaps you can get just kind of super laser focused on it, right? Because that's your life.
Right. But you can also get, I call it Krabbe'd out. where you just see so much crabbed, and I'm just like, okay, I need to take a break.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking, like, you could probably get some sort of, like, compassion fatigue in a way, and, like, it's just all consuming.
Right, because, you know, it does bring you flashbacks of everything that happened, you know, but Dawson, you're like, okay, like, I need to take a break. Like, it's bringing me so many flashbacks.
which also takes a lot of awareness to get to know when you gotta step out. So tell me about your family today. I know you have another little one.
Yes. After Dawson passed, we looked into IVF and we started that process, and we now have Lucas. He is almost 2 and he's completely ineffective. Krabbe doesn't even carry the gene, so it's not anything we have to worry about in the future.
Yeah.
He is crazy. He is wonderful. His favorite word is no. And he looks just like Dawson.
Oh my gosh.
We named him Lucas after Dawson because Dawson's middle name is Luke. And that's why his name is spelled Lukas. So right after Dawson, Luke.
So beautiful. We won't go into it today, but probably for the future, we'll talk to you and maybe even Pop Taylor on this episode about IVF for family planning for these types of disorders. I know we chatted about maybe talking about that at some point. So obviously, there's so many families who consider going through that with different disorders like Krabbe and Sanfilippo and all those things. So we'll chat about that topic later. Well, you're a courageous and brave woman, Casey. I commend you. And I think everything that you're doing is so awesome and you're helping to change the world. So thank you for everything. And thank you for sharing Dawson and Luke and your family story. I know it probably is difficult sometimes, but you're making such a big difference. So I really appreciate you being on this show today to share some of your story. And if there's anything else that you can leave for anyone, any advice, any sort of empowerment to get started and do something in advocacy, or anyone who's just in the thick of it and who is grieving a loss of the child.
I would say, like, if you're in the thick of it, like a diagnosis, and you're taking care of your rare disease child like every day, you need to have your out, like your time to yourself. I know it's so cliche to say, but you really need to make time for yourself. I did that. I had like a little like crafting side gig. But if I didn't have that, I felt like I would have lost myself, honestly. Like, take time for yourself, read a book, go for a walk, join the Once Upon a Gene walking therapy.
Oh, yes, she did. I didn't even pay her to say that.
It's so important to take care of yourself when you're going to do like something like this. And there's no right or wrong way to grieve. Advocating was my way, but if you want to lay in your bed every day and watch Netflix, that is fine too.
Amen.
Whatever gets you through the day.
Okay, Casey. Well, I look forward to watching you grow as an advocate and to see all of the amazing things that you contribute your talents and skills and heart toward. So I appreciate it. And thank you so, so much.
No problem. And I'm going to get walking. I promise.
I'll get you out there.
I hope you've been enjoying this podcast. If you like what you hear, please share this show with your people, and please make sure to rate and review it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also head over to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter to connect with me and stay updated on the show. If you're interested in sharing your story, or if you have anything you would like to contribute, please submit it to my website at effieparks.com. Thank you so much for listening to the show and for supporting me along the way. I appreciate y'all so much.
I don't know what kind of day you're having, but if you need a little pick-me-up, Ford's got you.